Howdy and welcome to our, thank you. Yeah, I like that. Our third episode. Today, we're going to be talking about offers and acceptance of offers and what goes into writing an offer, you know, pretty much everything up until the point that you need financing or anything like that.
Correct. So you found the house that you have fell in love with. You either used an outside web service or you used a realtor or whatever you did use. And now you're like, I want to go further. I would like to buy this property. And a lot of people don't know what's in the contract. They don't know how they sign it, how they, you know, offer anything. They basically say, okay, how do I buy this house? Yeah. So
what you can offer.
What you can. Yeah, what you can and can't if your offer gets accepted.
Stipulations you can put in the offer about, you know, how much goes towards you in escrow. Mm-hmm. If, you know, the agent's going to put any money towards you. Ooh, from their compensation.
That's
a little hidden. That's
a hidden nugget. You found some gold there. Because let me tell you, agents can a little bit of their commission back in your pockets.
Yeah, they can.
A lot of times.
You don't know.
You don't know that.
No.
And I don't want to blow the secret open, but I have in the past with a few other friends or close, you know, friends or relatives, you know, welcoming present, I've given some of my commission because a lot of people don't know how agents get paid.
They don't.
And how agents mostly are all working on a 1099 commission base. So just quickly, how agents, they don't charge you an hour. They're not like a lawyer. They don't charge you to show a house. They don't make really any money until the property closes. They do all of the work pro bono until that escrow closes, and then they get a commission cut. And they, another fine nugget is if you're selling a house, you can negotiate. If somebody sits across from you with a hard number that says, I have to sell your house and I require a 6% commission, 3% to the buying agent, 3% to the selling agent, you can look them in the eye and you say, how low can you go? And I'm not suggesting, because some agents, they do above and beyond and they require that 6% to
adequately sell your house.
Yes.
Right.
You know, but there's a fine line between negotiations and there's a fine line between offers. And when you're sitting there and you're trying to rack your brain about how much you want to offer, you have to understand it's what you feel comfortable with. Just because a number is on a website or a piece of paper that says, I want $549,000 for this house, and if I don't get it, just kick rocks. That's not necessarily true. You can offer whatever you feel is comfortable. It might not go through, but...
Yeah, I mean, within reason, I'd say. I mean, you're not going to go up to a $500,000 house and say, here's $250,000. You going to take it or not? You know, but it's like, you know.
That would be the dream, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd love that. But no, but if somebody's offering, you know, if they have it listed for $549,900, you say, well, I don't want to pay $549,900. I don't think the house is worth that or that. I'm not comfortable paying that amount. But you say, I am comfortable at the $510,000 mark, mm-hmm. Right? You know, you're within striking distance. That's not saying that you're way too far out of the box.
That's a counteroffer, right?
Yeah.
There, potentially. I mean, so how it works is, say, for example, Zach is selling a house, and I want to buy the house. I then contact my agent, who then draws up the paperwork. The paperwork will consist of the address of the house, the contingencies upon the house, the price that I'm willing to pay, and then basically how long we want to stay in escrow. So Zach, being the seller, asks for very specific things. He asks for an escrow deposit, which is a good faith deposit. Basically what that means is it's an amount of money that he feels comfortable asking up front. That money goes into an escrow account, which sits there for the duration of the sale. So it doesn't go anywhere. It's used at the end for the portion of the sale. But in the front of the offer, they want to make sure you're serious.
Yeah, it's a way of making sure that the seller knows that the person that wants to buy this house is doing so in the regards that they both want to sell, you know, or they both want this deal to go through, basically. So the only way, you know, I mean, this is just the method that's been used for years and years and years, because it's kind of like you put your money where your mouth is.
Correct.
You know, if you want to buy the property, this is how much it's going to cost so that I know you're serious.
Yeah. I want to see some money so that I take my property off of the market for you.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, I could have multiple offers and I could have backup offers, but I'm willing to go forward with you because you're willing to put this amount of money down.
Yeah. And then, you know, also other parts of an offer, when it comes down to it, each offer is completely different than the other one, because in this, there's so many different kinds of loan types a person can have. There's so many different contingencies a person could have, and there's so many different like financial differences that each person has coming into a property sale. So for instance, if a seller has 8 different offers on their table, each one's going to be different.
Every offer
is going to ask for different things. Each person has a different understanding of what needs to be done, right? Because in the offer, what you're going to be writing about is you're going to be writing about, you know, is this contingent on whether or not I get an inspection done and it comes back clear? Some offers don't have that.
Yep.
Some people don't care if the property's inspected before they buy it. Crazy, I know. I would never advise somebody to buy a house without inspecting it, but some do, right? Yeah. So an offer could say, well, this is contingent on inspection. I'm happy to put the money down. I'm happy to offer $539 for a $549 house, but I have my 10 or 15 day good faith period, but after inspection, I have 5 days to choose whether or not I want to go forward.
Yeah. If there's any major issues with the property, AKA, you know, foundation damage or roofing damage or something that might cost quite a bit to fix, then you might have, you know, an option of backing out of that property and still getting your escrow deposit back because you did your due diligence and you found, you know, it was contingent upon inspection. Another huge contingency, which people don't understand as well, is contingent upon a previous sale. Mm-hmm. So basically how this works is I want to buy a new house, but I own my house and the bank won't let me buy this new house until my house is currently on the market or in escrow. So basically the bank says, I don't feel or I'm not comfortable with giving you a loan until I know that house that you're living at right now, this second, is going to be off your financial plate. You're not going to be paying the mortgage on that home any longer. So you need to put your house, your current residence, up for sale, and you need to find a buyer so that you can purchase this new home, because you're not going to have enough funds to be able to float 2 homes. And it happens a lot. I've had multiple different offers where it's contingent upon them selling their own home, which is very scary because then you're double dipping. There's 2 deals that you have to worry about. You have to worry about your deal that's making sure that everything's going smoothly. And then on the back end, you have to worry about their deal to make sure that they are doing everything and their house is going smoothly. Because if then they fall out, your deal falls out.
Yeah, it's a double whammy.
It really is.
No, it's so with every different type of contingency you can think of, there's also different types of, I like to call it loan strength. When it comes to an offer and acceptance, we're probably going to do an episode on loans specifically, but know that, you know, there's FHA loans, right? There's VA loans, there's conventional loans, there's jumbo loans. I think there's one now called like the 0%. There's another, there's a ton of them, there's right?
VA there. I mean,
there's, so each loan has a backer. And each one has strength to it, a difference, right? Because like, for instance, an FHA loan only goes up to a certain amount of money or only goes up to a certain...
But it requires a very little down payment to get on the property.
And credit score as well.
Correct.
So it's, since it's a government subsidized loan, you only have to put down 3.5% if it's your first time buying. Mm-hmm. And you can use it on a property that has less than 4 dwellings. So correct, you could have a multiple dwelling property as long as it's under 4.
Yeah.
Whereas a conventional loan, which is normally a 20% down, you can have whatever you want as long as you have 20% down.
It's more of the, you're putting more money down, so we trust you more.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the financial issues that happened in like the 08, 09, 2010 era was a lot of these government loans were just getting crazy and out of hand. And when the market dipped, everybody walked away. And when everybody walks away from their houses and there's an influx in property, the house markets tank because it then turns from a seller's market to a buyer's market. And then whoever has the cash at that time
is king.
Is king. But going back to offers, we can do a whole 4-hour thing on loans and bore you guys all to death. But that's a loan officer's job. But if you're looking at an offer specifically and you want to put an offer down, what you're going to do is you're going to have to sit down, or you can get it, you know, emailed to you. Read the offer, because there is going to be specific things that request in the offer. Now, information-wise, it's going to give the house, like I said, the price you're willing to pay and the escrow date. You get to choose the escrow date. Traditionally, 30 or 45 days is normally how it goes. And that's when you're going to take possession of the property. But there are different aspects that you can request in this document that you might not know about. And one of those things is you can ask for money back. You could say, at the closing of this property, I want you to help me pay $5,000 in escrow. And you can request that. And the seller at the closing of the property would then pay $5,000 towards your escrow fee. There's another thing too, is you can request specific appliances. If something says online or on the MLS, hey, no appliances, but you really like that Viking kitchen and that Viking fridge or the washer and dryer, that's all negotiable. That's things that you can add into your offer that could strengthen or can hurt your offer. Because on the other end, if they're offering everything, yeah, the whole kitchen staying and all the ceiling fans are staying because, you know, those are attached to the property, and the washer and dryer staying, and the barbecue,
cabinets in the garage are staying.
Oh yeah, the built-in cabinets,
outdoor barbecue unit staying, everything staying.
But on your offer, you're like, I already have all that stuff. And I already really like the stuff that I have. I'm just going to be moving it from one property to the other. You could then use that in your offer as a negotiable tool and say, hey, I'm not needing any of that stuff. So is there a potential of me offering a little less? Because you could then take that stuff with you, or you can sell it yourself.
Yeah. You know, if they're like, oh, I don't want to take it, that's why I'm leaving it. It's like, okay, well, you can still make money selling the appliances yourself then, because I'm going to bring my own.
Yeah.
So you can use it as a tactic to negotiate with. And that happens very often. I mean, there's pretty much every deal I've done, there's come a time where somebody says, oh, I like that. Is there a way that I can get that? Can I keep that?
Specific, you know? Furniture. Sometimes I get deals where it's like, wow, those bar stools look really good at that counter.
Yeah.
Is there any way that they would leave those bar stools? And it's just all negotiating. It's basically asking, are you guys interested in leaving your bar stools? Yeah, because those bar stools might only be worth a couple $100, but in the end of it, making sure that both parties are happy makes for a very smooth transition.
Yeah. And then on top of that, so you've got, when you come into this offering situation and you, let's say you've got, you know, you say, all right, well, yeah, I'd love some money back, right? And you say, hey, seller, I'd like this much money back towards my closing costs, right? There's also something else that you can look into, which is let's say you walk the property with the inspector. The inspector says, well, there's nothing really that needs, you know, there's not a lot of work, right? Well, maybe the screen door needs replacing, right? Or, you know, maybe there's a little bit of spackle, or, You know, maybe the outdoor fence needs a little bit of repair. Some, you know, menial little things that are, don't, you know, they maybe equate up to a few $100s, but they're nothing crazy. They're not going to be the difference between you not buying this property, right? You're going to say, well, what's the difference of me putting up a few, you know, extra fence posts, right? You can go in your offer and say, hey, well, I know there's a few little things that need to be done. Could you give me some allowance towards that off the price, right? So say, hey, maybe $500 towards, you know, repairs that I have to do for the property.
So what we're saying is, if you're doing an inspection, so you've offered, the seller has then accepted your offer, and you're going further into the escrow, which is getting an inspection done. If the inspection report comes back with anything negative, that's a negotiation tool that you could then use to negotiate money towards you at closing. So, for example, I was selling a house where they didn't find many things wrong with the property, so they started nitpicking a little bit, and the nitpicking consisted of they wanted to make sure that the paint on the outside of the house was redone. And, okay, the sellers weren't really interested in repainting the house. They didn't want to repaint the house. They felt that the paint was, I mean, it was only a couple of years old, so why would we spend, you know, money to repaint the house? So they turned that down, and they said, you know what, we're not willing to repay the house, but we're willing to give you a little bit of money back at escrow so that if you really want to repaint the house, you can use that money. You could do whatever you want with that money, but you could repaint it. And it's a win-win situation when it comes to that, because then one party says, okay, I'm willing to negotiate, and the other party says, okay, then being just flat out told no. Because no one likes hearing that. No one likes when you're buying a property from a seller and you're trying to get what you want out of it. No one likes getting told, no, go pound sand. So in that aspect, there's a lot of negotiation tools in the contract itself. Now, a lot of people, when they put an offer in and it's their first offer, they think it's instantaneous. They look at you and they say, what'd they say?
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is at the end of the offer, there's a acceptance time frame to where you have to give the seller adequate amount of time to look over the offer. Because most of the offer is anywhere between 5 to 9 to 11 pages, depending on the state you're in. So it's not like it's just a simple thing, but they want to make sure that if they're going to go with your offer, they look it over and look at all the T's and dots the I's and go from there. So it's not like a text message, unfortunately. It's normally a formal, takes about anywhere between 12 to 24, sometimes 36 hours to get a response. And the response can either be a counter, it could be an acceptance, or it could be a rejection. And if it's a counter, normally what it comes back with is the seller will accept on the terms that he has now countered with. So you offer for what, a $549.9, you offer $530, they come back and say $540. Now, if you choose to accept that, you are now going in escrow because now the ball is in your court. An acceptance is obviously an acceptance. If you offer $530 for $549 and they accept, you're going forward. You won that bad boy. You're walking in and you better have that escrow check ready to go for title.
Yeah.
And a rejection is just that. It's rejection. Doesn't mean that you're out of the game yet. So don't get discouraged if you get a full rejection. It just means that they're willing, they're or not willing, let's say that, to wheel and deal as much as you might think they are.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does have a lot to deal with the climate of real estate at the time as well. That has a lot to do with what you can and can't get away with when it comes to putting an offer in, right? So like, the best way I can put it is if you think back to 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you could do this pretty much every time. Any person trying to sell their house at this point in time was looking to sell their house and they wanted to, which means you get the best bang for your buck, basically. You could ask, you know, hey, I need some wiggle room here. I need some wiggle room there. They're probably going to happily accommodate you because they want to get out of the property and they want you to be happy, right? Now, that these techniques work, but they work in a buyer's market. Because when the buyers have the power, that means they can ask for more.
Correct.
Now, currently, as of the 23rd of April, I would tell you that you do not have the power right this moment.
In specific locations, you might still have the power depending on the area of the country you're in.
Yes.
But as of right now, in most areas, in most suburbanized areas, in any areas that are connected to California specifically or New York.
Or Texas, or Florida, or Colorado, Nevada, Oregon, Arizona. Washington, Arizona,
North Carolina, you're gonna go in with a battle.
Yeah, it's gonna be a rough one.
It's not a buyer's; it will be a seller's market, which means that the power has now shifted from the buyer to the seller, and now they can now demand certain aspects because they have multiple offers. And for example, this is just a thing that we have now had to deal with for the last couple months. When I put a property up for sale, I got offers within the first 4 hours of the property going live. Once the property goes live, I was bombarded by phone calls and text messages and emails regarding that property. Now, I'm in the driver's seat and the seller's in the driver's seat in that aspect because they're getting multiple offers, which means that they can drive the price up, which means that once they drive the price up, the best and the best and the best, they're going to get what they want. And for example, after 4 hours of hard negotiation, this house going up, they were able to get $20,000 above what they actually put it on for sale. So within a day, they were able to sell their property for more money that they thought they were going to be able to get out of that property. If you turn back time and looked at 2008 to 2014-ish between those,
In 2014, I had a sale of some of our friends. We lived in Las Vegas, which I don't know if anybody knows much about Vegas after 08, but if you've ever seen the Resident Evil movies, it looked a lot like that. It was a ghost town, and it was not recovering anytime soon. The property market in Vegas was the absolute lowest of the low. The bottom just fell out of the bucket. I'd just gotten my license, and we had some friends that were looking to buy a home. I said, well, I'm happy to help. So in doing so, at this point in time, everybody who was selling their house, if they got an offer on their property, they were elated. Mm-hmm. You know, any offer you could give them, they were just over the moon.
Was positive.
And so then my buyers at the time, they had the best options because now they've got a huge amount of property that they're looking at and falls into the, you know, the area they wanted, the bedrooms and bathrooms they wanted, the outdoor space they wanted, that sort of thing. They could find pretty much as many properties as they wanted, and everybody wanted to be, you know, receiving their offers, right? And so, I mean, it did take them 17 to get the home they wanted, because at the end of the day, if you ask for too much, you know, the person might not want to deal with you, you know?
Correct.
Because if you're asking for their firstborn, it's not going to work out.
No.
But
it's a give and take relationship.
Yeah, you know, you have to give as much as you would give, yeah. Right? Yeah, so pretty much what it comes down to is you want to do what's in your best interest. Now, obviously, it's in the best interest of both of you to do this deal. You both want the property, right? But, I mean, you're never going to ask for, a crazy amount back, or you're not going to ask them. I mean, sometimes, I mean, back in the day, I did see sometimes people paying the entirety of the escrow, or the, you know, or the entirety of somebody's.
It wasn't unheard of.
No, I mean, there's been times where, you know, it just matters what market you're in. You know, you can only tread as lightly as you are allowed to, basically. Yeah.
So if I was to take away a few things from this podcast today, I would tell you that if you're looking at putting an offer in, there's the bullet points that you want to ask your agent, which is, can I ask for any money back? Should I ask for any money back? How long should escrow be? And what should I be paying? Because the agent themselves should be running the comps, which is the comparative analysis for that neighborhood anyway. And they should literally sit across, because they're your agent. You should be able to trust them. They should sit across from you and say, I think this is a little overpriced. This is what I would offer. Because getting that opinion can save you in the long run, because an appraisal that appraises under what you offer can derail
everything, whole
offer.
Yeah.
So you want to know as much information going in, and that's why utilizing your agent is the greatest possibility for a new offer. And even if you have any questions on the offer itself, because there's some legality issues with, you know, mediation versus arbitration, and just ask your agent. Your agent has gone to school. Your agent has taken the exam. Your agent works for a broker, or is a broker themselves. They should be able to sit down and explain in layman's terms what the contract entails.
Yeah, and if they can't, there's somebody who will tell them.
Correct.
So that's the thing when it comes to agents in general as well. You know, newer agents, older agents, there's definitely a difference in experience, but you'll always get the information no matter what. If they don't know, they can find a way.
Yeah. If that's why they have a managing broker in their office. So if they don't know, they're supposed to go and ask their broker for guidance and get the information that they need.
Yeah.
So we want to thank you again for stopping by and listening to us. And hopefully some of this information seeps in and maybe, you know, you learned a little bit of a hidden gem in there, a nice gold nugget or something that you could take with you and put in your pocket for later. And hopefully get an offer going for a house that you see yourself living in.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So again, we want to thank you. And like I said, if you have any questions, you can always email them at admin@homeuplink.com. Or you can go to our website and there's a contact us button, which goes directly to us as well. So if you do have any questions, please do not hesitate.
Yeah, let us know.